Welcome back to the 20th episode of The Pipeline. Fockett, very special guest on today. Super pumped for this one. Think it's certainly a long time coming. We have Tristan, co-founder at Backpack, and Kevin, of course, the faithful co-host, returns. Thanks for coming on, lads.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Tristan, where are you calling out of today?
Calling from Tokyo. It's a beautiful morning. Sun is shining. Spring is definitely underway over here. We just had the sakura blossoms. It was pretty amazing.
Love to hear that. We're calling in from nighttime East Coast. So this is the global pod today.
For sure.
Amazing.
Well, I mean,
we'll let you run it, Dan.
I think this one has been a long time coming. Certainly, Backpack is a foundational part of the Pipeline story. Most people probably don't know this, but back in September, before the Pipeline was even the Pipeline, Armani joined Twitter Spaces as our first ever guest. And it was just an awesome conversation. It was inspiration to start up the Pipeline podcast and bring a bit more awareness about Monad itself, as well as ecosystem projects. So super pumped to come full circle here and have Tristan as well.
To add a little bit of lore to that as well, Danny crushed that Twitter Spaces so hard that Eunice messaged me after the Twitter Spaces and was like, hey, is Danny doing it? Like, can we pick up Danny? This seems like an awesome opportunity that we should be hitting harder. And I was like, I will definitely shoot him a message. So, yeah, maybe the Pipeline's actual birth story, Backpack plays a big role in it, to say the least.
Well, I didn't even know that lore. So good to know.
New lore.
New lore, deep lore, for sure. And it was around the same time that Nad Lads with an N was emerging as a bit of like a moniker in the Monad community, just showing a lot of love for a project that much of our community holds and loves as well. So it's awesome that it's been part of the founding story there. And Mad Lads certainly has come a long, long way since then. No secret that it's now one of the most hyped NFT projects of all time in the top 10 charts, and for good reason. But would love to hear some insight from you, Tristan, as to what's the initial inspiration for creating Mad Lads and what's that journey been like?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say Monad and us have a similar genesis story, in that what was the most important for us in the beginning was building community and creating a group of people. And the story behind that was actually really interesting. It was a combination of catching lightning in a bottle and using that as a filtering mechanism to find the best people amongst an ocean of engagement. And so what happened was, when we first came to market, we came to market without telling anyone what we were doing. We internally had come up with this idea of XNFTs, which were these decentralized applications that you could run in the wallet, but we hadn't shared that publicly. We had only individually told different friends and colleagues and people we had professional relationships with in the Solana ecosystem. And when we launched the Twitter at the very, very beginning, we actually had a lot of these people change their usernames on Twitter to XNFT Anatoly, XNFT Raj, XNFT Armani, XNFT Tristan, and there was this huge batch of people who all changed their name, and still no one knew what was going on. They just saw this name change, they saw it was related to us, they saw it was related to this new Twitter we had launched, and this huge air of mystery started, and people wanted to know. There's just like this secret, and everyone wanted to know. And so everyone started following that account, everyone started engaging with that account, and people went rabid. We were you know, getting about 10, we got about 10,000 followers in that first month on a fresh account without doing like any type of paid engagement whatsoever. And what I realized really quickly is there were a lot of interesting replies and comments and people who were interacting with us. And I said, how do I channel all this energy and bring it into one place so that we can have these people in a place where we can have a back and forth conversation with them and have them as a core part of this community we wanted to build? And so what I did is I created a private Discord and I started slowly trickling people into this Discord. And what I was doing initially was if I saw somebody post a really good meme as a reply to one of our memes that we had posted from that Twitter account, I would you know, send them a Discord invite link. If I saw somebody post some interesting content or a well-written piece, or if this person seemed like they could be a good contributor, there's a variety of reasons I would let them into the Discord. And throughout this process, we would kept getting better and better memes because better and better memers were joining the community, and they were all making these what the fuck is XNFT memes, and we had this whole blast going at that time. And I realized that I had a way where I could publicly signal who I was choosing for this Discord. And that was through this gif of a little anime girl throwing a blue dodgeball at a boy. And I started using that as a reply to people who I would then select to add to the community. And it created this social phenomenon where people saw what type of things were getting these people into the community, and they started replicating that. And it became this Cambrian explosion of memes where everyone wanted to get in. I assume most people thought we were going to be an NFT project with a hype mint and everyone wanted whitelist. And they started emulating these behaviors and creating even better memes and better videos and better content, which made it even easier for me to self-select this initial group of people. So, you know, fast forward like a month and a half, maybe 2 months, we now have something like 15,000 followers organically on our Twitter and maybe 500 or so people in our Discord. And these people were all phenomenal. They weren't just kind of like airdrop farmers. They weren't just sort of run-of-the-mill crypto people who check in once a week into Discord to see what's going on. They were hardcore, chronically online crypto addicts and meme masters. And so we started just spending time with these people. I just spent tons and tons of hours in the Discord talking to these guys, sharing what we were thinking. We didn't tell them what XNFTs were, but we just kept the dialogue going and created a personal connection with these people. And then this meme blossomed out of all of this, which was the blue ball meme. Where it came from essentially was this combination of things. One, this gif I was using of this girl throwing this blue dodgeball that was hitting the boy. And the other was that we were blue balling everyone because everyone wanted to know what XNFTs were, but nobody could figure it out. So we were just blue balling all of the Solana ecosystem. And this precipitate an even better series of memes because the blue ball memes were hilarious. Like people could use it for anything. There were just like infinite edits of videos with the blue ball, and it created even more fun and engagement. And we pretty quickly realized as we got closer to the launch of the wallet itself, we started letting some of these initial community members become beta testers for the wallet. And about maybe like a month or so into that process, we saw that just doing product and tech wasn't going to be enough, and we needed a way to feel or to allow this community to feel like they were really part of something that we were building. And I'll give you guys a very cheesy analogy that we used to come to this decision, which is if you look back at 208, it's not that Satoshi solved the double spend problem. So it wasn't just the technological advancement that happened there. It was the very early cyberpunks, libertarians, sovereign money types that saw this innovation and went, oh, shit, this changes everything. This changes the game. And they became the evangelists of what Satoshi had created. And that intersection of product and culture is what allowed for everything that has come since then. And so we said, hey, we have our product, which is this wallet that we're building. We do have a culture to some degree, but that culture won't maintain itself if we just try and channel these people into being our product users. So we needed a way to keep that energy alive in the long run, and we realized that the way to do that, the best community building exercise we could do, is to launch an NFT collection and use this core group of people that we had joined or that we had added to our Discord at the very beginning to be the cultural backbone for this community as it grew. So we had spent enough time with them that they were all completely aligned with us. They understood the vision. They understood our ethos, how we thought about the world, how we treated each other. And as we slowly opened this up and we started going towards making the Discord public, this group of 500-600 people, to this day, that Discord now has maybe like 30 plus thousand people. But that core group, a lot of them, if not the majority, are still in there maintaining the culture so that we don't have to spend those countless hours in there anymore. I mean, I still pop in. I still talk to people. I still love the lads so much. But these guys are the torchbearers of this culture. So that is most of the reasoning behind the Mad Lads collection. I guess the last thing I'll add in this very long-winded story is that we also needed to showcase the XNFT technology. So we needed a way to make it so that if you had an NFT, you could also have it be an XNFT as an example to the world as to what that looked like. So initially, the XNFTs, these apps that we had built, so if you go to xnft.gg to the listener, they were all decentralized applications, but they were just apps. You would get a delegated permission to run the code attached to the NFT that the creator of that app had done. But with the NFT side of thing, with the Mad Lad side of thing, we now created this ability for people to have an NFT, but have that NFT also be an application and give a lot of depth of experience that wasn't really possible in the NFT space before that. And I think the last thing I'll say, which, you know, might preempt some of the next questions, is that one of the things that really set us apart was, for one, we had built, you know, I would say the best community of the Solana bear market, of the crypto bear market. These people were diehard. They were rabid. And we also started doing things no one had seen before, which is we started doing all these interplays of the wallet as a community engagement tool. So I'll give some examples. Even at the beginning, when we had these community members in the Discord, we didn't give everyone immediate access to the backpack wallet because we knew that every beta tester was going to get a whitelist for the collection. So we had to be mindful of who was getting into this beta test phase. And we started creating these dynamics that we had never seen before and that we thought were phenomenal, which were, we can use the wallet interface, keep it locked if you don't have an invite code, but add games to it so that people have a way of winning an invite code. And this set off, I would say, our next phase of community building engagement, which is we started doing these different games. The first one was we would put an AI-generated image, so, you know, think early Midjourney images, on this extension space, and people would have to guess what the prompt we had used was to generate that image. And so people were just losing their minds, all communally looking at the same picture, talking about it nonstop on Discord, and every once in a while somebody would hit, and boom, they'd get an invite code, and they were into the extension, and they were going crazy. And what was really cool is that it wasn't just sort of like, you know, purely retail participants. We had team members from a lot of other crypto projects. We had even founders. We had, to this day, somebody will come to me and be like, yeah, I got the whitelist because I guessed the AI prompt. Somebody who's like working in crypto, which I think is amazing. So we really focused a lot of attention on that because nothing else was happening during the bear market. And then we changed it up and you had to guess animal sounds. You had to guess what animal made the sound that you could hear that when you played the audio file and the extension. And then we made a Minecraft map where you had to navigate the map and find the hidden codes and different renderings of this map. And we created this whole experience when that's what really it comes down to in community building, is you share and create experiences with and for people. And when you do that, you now have a group of people who genuinely care about what you're doing, way beyond the financial incentives, way beyond, oh, I'm going to get a whitelist here. And that was the genesis of all of this.
I feel like there's very, very few teams that innately understand the importance of building this cultural and super deep social layer. And by doing that, you just had one of the most amazing Trojan horses for introducing new tech, which was obviously the XNFT craze across Twitter. I mean, thinking back to myself, like, I was one of those people that was trying to figure out, like, okay, what is XNFT? Like, how do I get this whitelist? Is it going to be a NFT collection? Is it going to be a new standard? Or like, you know, what could this possibly be? But I think everyone had this mutual excitement around it, which was very infectious. And, you know, something we talk about a lot is how difficult it is with a traditional tech startup to get people to actually dog food your product and try it out. And in crypto, when you have this opportunity to actually build a rabid and enthusiastic community behind your product, that, you know, goes a long ways beyond marketing itself. But I'm curious, you know, personally, to what degree was this like an intentional pre-planned strategy to go from XNFT to Mad Lads and, you know, then ultimately the exchange? Or like, how much of this was iterative and experimental?
Yeah, it's a really good combination of two things. So I think on one hand, it is a lifetime on the internet. It is 10 plus years playing RuneScape since I was 7 years old and digital community building in these games. It was being on Discord since I was 8 years old. It was being on forums. It was playing a part within these digital communities for so long that create these foundational aspects that you can lean into to understand how to build and participate in digital communities. So there's like this, you know, decade of, I'm old now, maybe like two decades of prior experience in this domain. And then you can use all of that context, you synthesize all of it, and you use it as things emerge in the current context of the company building that you're having. So it wasn't our intention to have a private Discord at the beginning. I just realized that this was the way that we could channel this energy that we were seeing on Twitter. So to give a quick example, it was only in the last few months or so since we launched the exchange that we saw the same amount of Twitter engagement than we did in our first month of that Twitter being live, even with 10,000 followers. And now, you know, we had hundreds of thousands and the engagement was still at a similar level. Now we're way, way past as of recently, but just to give context on how crazy that energy was at the beginning. And then this realization of Mad Lads of NFTs, yeah, it was iterative. We didn't launch the wallet knowing we were going to do an NFT collection, but we did know that we needed a showcase for the XNFTs. And we knew that it's always easier to build these showcases yourself than it is to have another team do it for the first time and convince them and whatnot. So there was a combination of things there. And I mean, if you want me to fast forward, I can go into the exchange. Is that, should we dive into that?
I actually was about to ask a question to transition it. So yeah, can dive in. One thing I just want to point out, the amount of overlap that I was unaware of between early Mad Lads backpack community and early Monad community is just like blew my mind. Like we even had the same Minecraft experiences that we were building, and like having the locked Telegram or the locked Discord early on, like people do not do that in crypto. So just crazy to hear. And then, I mean, even as far as like the blue ball meme and like now we're Nats, right? Like the crazy, just a lot of the similarities has been wild. And I feel like that's why our like all like Monad's community, Mad Lads and the backpack community, like they get along so well, because it's the same type of culture. It's the same sense of humor. The overlap is wild, but yeah, I guess yeah. I would ask, right? Like, so you have this big XNFT push, Mad Lads Mint is, you know, like the single source of light and joy for a lot of people throughout the bear market. Backpack is growing in the amount of users. And then I still remember the day that you guys announced the exchange. And I think a lot of people like almost had their minds blown, right? Because they're like, there's an NFT collection, there's a wallet, and now an exchange. Like this team is like one, just like giga smart, right? The ability to handle all of these things. but two, there's never been a synergy that has existed like that, like from the jump. So I'd love to hear like some of the thought process into when you guys initially had the idea for the exchange to then going and executing and now like what it is today, right? Like we see crazy stats, like the exchange is putting up like billions in daily volume, which is just unheard of for an exchange that's so young. So yeah, hearing some of the backstory would be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll start at the beginning of what you were saying and then go forward. And not to be a sophist here, but I think that the reason that this form of community building works so well is that people want to be a part of something. Everyone innately wants to participate in the story in some way or another. We've all been conditioned by the story of the archetypal hero or of the story of the participants within the stories that we've looked at externally. And so when these opportunities occur and people see a story forming, there's this enormous desire at like a very subconscious level to be a part of it. And when you allow people to be a part of the story, then you just have, you have a cult, which is what you really need. Like you need, in crypto, distribution is so hard and you need a cult. And that is how you allow it, by being completely genuine and allowing people to participate within the story that you're building. So that's just like to your first comment. I think that was really interesting. And I'm gonna have another long-winded answer into the exchange, or maybe not too long-winded, but essentially the Mad Lads Mint was unique in that we also did everything within the wallet. So the whitelist claim, for those that had the whitelist, they had to claim their whitelist token within the wallet. When the mint was coming up, the public mint was done within the wallet. When the mint was done in the wallet, there was a game where you had to defeat the Mad King to be able to unrug your Mad Lad, because every Mad Lad was a rug at the beginning, and we had every single person that had minted on the screen clicking as rapidly as they could to kill this Mad King so that they could unlock, you know, their you know, turn their rug into their Mad Lad. And so we were creating experiences that people hadn't experienced before. This was the first time anyone had done something like this, and it generated a lot of attention. Also, there was just really nothing else going on in crypto at the time. It was a pretty dire, sad time. This is you know, that first quarter of 2023, excuse me. And yeah, things weren't great. Like, we just had that January dump. Like, Solana was kind of coming back from the brink of death with, like, the stuff that had gone down with Berninski and Vitalik, and everyone was like very on edge. And this was a center of attention of positive energy that people really appreciated, and I think very much helped re-blossom the Solana ecosystem. But the point of this is that it created a lot of hype, because it wasn't just the Solana ecosystem talking about this. We had given whitelists to people throughout all of crypto. There were Ethereum people participating on Solana for the first time. There were Bitcoin people. There were VC people. There were Cosmos people. Like, we had really gotten outside of the ecosystem. And I think this was the first time this had really happened for a Solana project. And so the energy around this mint was insane. And right around the time of the mint, we were so fortunate that serendipitously, the best lawyer in crypto, like I actually pretty confidently feel like I can say that, the best regulatory compliance and licensing expert in all of crypto was in Chicago for a job interview when he met up with Armani. And Armani was just sharing everything we were doing and showing him the different aspects of the attention and energy we were generating. And I guess their conversation, they just had a click, which was, hey, from our side, we know product. We have an insanely strong engineering team. We know marketing. We know distribution. We had a really strong brand. We were about to have this diehard community of NFT holders. And on the other hand, he knew everything on the regulatory licensing, exchange, compliance side of things better than anyone. So why wouldn't we merge forces with this thing that he was already building and combine expertise to basically fill this gap that had been left behind by FTX? So that was the genesis idea. It was at the very end of April. This partner had already been working on it on his end, but it was instead, let's do this JV. Let's bring this together. Let's not do this separately. And then, you know, from the following 6 or 7 months, the exchange was completely built. And then in November we launched it. And I think some points that are really important to make is that this is perhaps the first international focused exchange that has done things in the way that we have. So there's a few different things to touch on there. One of them is that we have been completely regulated and compliant from day zero. So we received the very first Vara full retail cryptocurrency exchange license. Vara is a very reputable regulator based in Dubai, and we were working with them from the very beginning to structure everything such that it fell under their purview. So this is the first time international exchange had started from a regulatory approach versus starting as a cowboy and then backtracking into the regulatory approach if they could. So that was one thing. We built the exchange in a way that had never been done before. So rather than just like copy pasting the existing matching engine models that existed out in the world or just like redoing that, we went back to first principles and we said, what are some of the most amazing things that have been built within the crypto space, the blockchain space, and could be applied to something like this? And so essentially, the Backpack Exchange is a permissioned blockchain in that there are different validators running different instances of the same exchange, which for one obviously allows for replayability back to the beginning of time on these validators, so that if any need ever arises to show a pinpoint moment in time of any write action that happened on the exchange, that's now possible. And also, if we get to the point where regulators or other large trusted parties are confident enough in crypto, you could imagine that we run a validator, a regulator runs a validator, a huge venture firm runs a validator, and then you truly have no single point of failure or ability of modification, which creates this very interesting permission distributed system in a way that hasn't been done before. And then the other component was the whole proof of reserves aspect, which has been built out, hasn't been implemented as of yet, but it's been a core piece of how we've been building infrastructure, which is, what if you could actually verify and not trust, and verify through this ZK proof of reserves system using your Backpack wallet to sort of like do the proof and see that your funds are where they are supposed to be, and obviously like MPC custodial setup and all those security things. But I think what's really important in this narration here is that if you have a spectrum and on one end you have Coinbase, who is this like paragon of compliance and responsibility and has gone public, it's a public company in the United States, it services the majority of the US at this point, but doesn't do very much internationally. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you have Binance, who came out in 2017, clawed market share by being the fastest, most crypto native team that put the products that the people wanted out into the world, but didn't really put too much attention or energy into the compliance regulatory thing for a long time. And then we're somewhere in the middle where we are very careful on the compliance and regulatory side so that every conversation we have with a regulator is from a place of trust and knowing that we don't have skeletons in our closet, which makes it much, much easier in our approach to gaining new licenses, but with a very crypto native, nimble product team that is able to adjust and spin out things as we see that we need them to grow and attract the user base within the crypto space. So those are some key points that I would say for the exchange. And then obviously the beauty is that we have this wallet, this non-custodial wallet that services Solana and Ethereum. So it's the user's on-chain journey. And then we have this exchange, which is the user's off-chain journey. So just to give you an example of a potential user lifecycle here, you could imagine your grandma wants to get into crypto. Maybe she's pretty sophisticated and she's done like trading equities for a long time. So she wants to do some crypto. And she can sign up to Backpack Exchange and she can deposit fiat. But you're telling her, hey, granny, you want to go trade meme coins on Solana? Like, screw these like centralized exchange listings. Like, go trade Grussy or like go trade like the most ridiculous, you know, shit coins on the blockchain. And she's like, okay, let's do it. And now all of a sudden it's super easy to get that fiat into a gas token and into the non-custodial wallet because it's all within the same user domain, within the same user experience. And we've made it such that if you have Backpack Wallet and you have the exchange, they recognize each other and you can withdraw from one to the other. You can use them in a very simultaneous manner that no other team has really done. And so it allows us to have this on and off chain experience within our hands so we can curate it in the best way possible for the users. And we have the Mad Lads, I would describe them as this top of funnel. They are our super fans, but they are also our super users. So not only do they just bring a ton of attention and eyeballs on anything we do on the product side, but they also test the heck out of everything we're doing and give us great feedback and are the beta testers of everything that we launch into the world. So it's a very synergistic triangle of things that we've put out. And while it seems like maybe it's these three separate things, they're all parts of a whole.
Yeah, that's absolutely, absolutely huge. I was just looking at Kevin's like picture being divided on the screen. I don't know if you guys saw that. but yeah, I mean, it seems like everything you start with comes from a point of building trust. And in crypto, that's pretty unique, right? And on the subject of the regulatory climate, like the day we're recording this is the day that the SEC announces they're taking action against Uniswap, and in general have seen a pretty uncooperative regulatory climate in the US for US-based builders. I'm curious, does that play a factor into the team's location in Tokyo or not so much?
I just woke up before this podcast and I did not know that happened.
Tristan
I'm like,
had,
what the?
Tristan just had the Uniswap news broken.
I'm like, what the fuck?
Check Hayden's pinned tweet. It's really good.
Oh, shit. Okay, I won't read it now, but okay.
Wells
notice. Interesting. Okay. Anyway, I'll check in on that later. Your question was around. Can you repeat that, Danny? This is the last part.
Or yeah. Go ahead. Is Tokyo way chiller for crypto, or what goes into the decision to be in Tokyo?
Yeah, totally. So we even before the exchange, we knew we wanted to get out of the U.S. Regulatory environment for crypto just wasn't in the most friendly place, and we know that Asia in many ways is the center of action for crypto. A lot, if not most, of the crypto energy generates from this side of the world. And so we already have that feeling for the wallet and the Mad Lads. But once the exchange started, it was like, obvious, okay, we need to get out of the United States and operate this internationally. And we wanted to be in Asia, which brought us to three options. So we had Hong Kong, we had Singapore, and we had Japan. And we had a variety of different things that we looked at across these three. But one really big point was that we already had somebody here in Japan working full time on getting the cryptocurrency exchange license for Japan. We had an office, and Japan is just phenomenal. I had never really been here before moving here, and I'm really, really happy it ended up being the decision. Although it has moved in a very slow and thoughtful manner on crypto regulation, it is consistently moving in the right direction. Unlike some other jurisdictions that said they were all in on crypto in 2020, 2021, and then after Luna very roughly pulled back and changed a lot of the things that they said they were going to be doing, Japan has slowly and intentionally been moving towards being a Web3 friendly jurisdiction throughout the bear, which we think is a good sign. And we think that obviously GDP is really important to crypto trading volumes. You guys may know this or may not, but GDP roughly maps one-to-one with crypto trading volume. And Japan is the third or fourth largest GDP in the world, and it just makes a ton of sense to create a community here, and once we have the exchange, to be able to service them from the exchange side of things. And that's sort of what went into this. I want to also maybe go into the launch of the exchange a little bit. That was like a prior question that I sort of glossed over, but we launched this exchange in November of last year. So it's been about 5 months now, which is crazy. Time is just absolutely zipping by. And we were rushed into launching, which I'm really glad we were. We probably would have spent another month or two just like refining before launching, but Pith wanted to partner with us as a distribution vehicle to get their token out to more people when they had their TG. So they had their on-chain distribution where they gave out tokens to, I think, 93,000 wallets across many different blockchains. But they also wanted a strategy to give out tokens to sex users, to users outside of the on-chain world. And they saw us as a good partner for that. And so we actually launched with this huge launch event, which was that we had 10 million Pith to give out to users of Backpack Exchange. And the marketing or distribution of this event went viral, especially in China. For some reason, it just exploded. Truly, truly exploded. People had a little bit of an inkling on who we were because of Mad Lads, but very, very little. They, to give you context on how sex-first these users were, they thought Pith was our native exchange token that we were dropping through this launch. But what it created was that we now had 140,000 KYC'd users in the first week, and we had 74,000 people that participated in this Pith drop. Of course, it broke everything, as you can imagine. Like, we had just launched this. There was there were 10 days where we didn't sleep. I kid you not, there were days in this office where I came in at 6 in the morning and left at 7 in the morning the next day, slept for 3-4 hours, came back to the office, was here. Like, it was 10 days of just absolute nonstop, but it hardened us in a way that, you know, 6 to 8 months of regular operations never would have been able to, which was an amazing thing. It allowed us to see exactly where the pain points were across all of our systems, both human and technological, and improve on that. And it ended up being a really successful event because Pith got their token out to 93,000 people with their on-chain event, but we got their token out to 74,000 people with our off-chain event. So it was really cool to see that we could actually be this strong distribution partner. And from there, it's been a lot of growth. It's just been a lot of growth for the exchange. We have something like 350,000 active traders over the last couple months. And we launched something akin to our point system in February, which has just been generating absurd amounts of spot volume. So to give context, before February 13th, when we launched this, we were doing around $3 to $7 million of 24-hour spot volume on the exchange. Between February 13th and March 18th, which was the first snapshot of this rank program, we did $27.5 billion of spot volume. We had several days of billion-dollar-plus spot volume. We had days where our Sol market was the largest Sol spot market in the world. And it was insane to see the amount of energy that we could create and the amount of people that were onboarding to participate within this, and how happy the market makers were being the other side of this, you know, these retail traders that were just going crazy, and that also onboarded more market makers, which has improved liquidity and so on and so forth. And then on the launch of Wormhole is when we did the drop for that first snapshot. So we took everyone that had done volume between February 13th and March 18th, and we did a distribution of 27 million Wormhole tokens to these 300,000 people that had traded in that period. So basically, it was really awesome for us because we were able to use all these tokens as a growth vehicle to these new people that had joined the exchange. And it was great for Wormhole because they now were able to get their token into the hands of 300,000 people that otherwise wouldn't have held their token and may not even really have known who they were, because the majority of these people are these sex primary users who have never really done too much in the on-chain world. So that was this first really large event that we did. Then we did the second snapshot where we had a day that we did $8.6 billion of spot volume, which for a new exchange is unheard of.
That was crazy.
Unheard of. Like, yeah. Absolutely, absolutely unheard of. And what it's really doing, yeah, maybe it's not going to be continual volume at that level because people are, you know, trying to get our point system, but it's stress testing the hell out of our infrastructure and getting us into a place that as we grow and grow and grow, we'll be able to handle any type of load that is sent our way. I mean, everyone goes down. Every exchange has issues. Like, this will happen, but we feel much more confidently than we did before these experiences. And one thing that's been really great to see is that between events, we keep plateauing higher and higher on organic spot trading volume. So we were doing $3 to $7 million before we did the first event. We went up to 30 to 60 million in the days after that first snapshot, where we had like a week or two where we didn't announce anything else was happening. People didn't know if there were more incentives of any kind. And then after, let me check where we are today, but after that second snapshot where we did the Tensor drop and we, you know, did the distribution of the Tensor token to the people that had traded that second snapshot, we've been around like $120 to $160 million of daily spot trading volume with no incentives whatsoever announced. So the plateau is getting higher and higher, and it's just our job to keep providing more and more products so that these people just want to naturally use Backpack as their primary trading vehicle. So right now we added Bitcoin, we're adding Ethereum pretty soon, we're going to add ERC-20s, we're going to add futures quite soon, and we're just going to keep putting product out into the world that makes people just want to use this as their home for all their trading activity. So that's, in a nutshell, a little bit of what's been happening. What's also been really amazing is that, again, all of these users that we have on the exchange, the vast, vast majority of them have never really done much on the on-chain world. They didn't know anything about Solana, and we've been their immersion into Solana and into the on-chain world. And we can do these cool things where, for example, with Tensor, the first requirement to be able to get their drop wasn't just the trading volume on the exchange. The user had to go to Tensor, connect their wallet, and place a single trade on Tensor. And Richard from Tensor posted this chart of new unique wallet addresses. And it was just, when we launched this campaign, it was just up and to the right. So we just like sent, you know, I think like 100,000 people onto an on-chain protocol that had probably never really used much on-chain stuff, maybe BSC at some point in time. And it really showed us that we can also drive this force onto the on-chain world. And we're not adverse to that at all. I think a lot of exchanges try and keep their users contained to the centralized exchange experience. What we're trying to do is we want people to use the on-chain world. Go do whatever you want. Just ideally use Backpack while you do it. Use Backpack Wallet.
That's massive. Massive. I think like that plateau is higher than your average person who's not like deep in the weeds every day. That's probably well higher than they would expect. And, you know, it's a testament to compounding these things over time and pulling different growth levers. And also, like, again, back to building trust within each product. I got to ask, though, for that 10-day period of no sleep, is that where that viral beanbag picture emerged from that is somehow being used like across all corners of the internet?
That was actually right around the time of the mint when the whole team was in Chicago for that period. And yeah, that photo that we put together, as you guys have seen, is probably the thing that we've done that has gotten the most cumulative engagement. If I had to guess, from all the viral posts I've seen that have used that, especially all these AI posts, it's probably at like 20, 25 million impressions at this point, if not more. So it's kind of crazy. We just see it just keeps coming back up and back up and back up. You should show it on the pod, Danny, when you clip this together.
Yeah, we got to clip it up there.
100%.
It reminds me of Eric from CMS took a picture of his New York apartment when he first moved in, and it was just the mattress on the floor. And it just got picked up as like, oh, this is the tech guy picture, like mattress on the floor. And that, yeah, same thing. Like I would say that I've seen your picture. I would say that that's like 100 million impressions plus. Cause I've seen it on like random TikToks, like not related at all. It's just
Instagram,
that
Pinterest.
It's just crazy.
It's permeated into the meme culture of the internet. Which is what we want, by the way, right? Like, that's the most valuable thing you can do on the internet. Become a meme. And it has to be something that is, like, it has to be something where all the mid-curvers will look at it and be like, these guys are stupid. Look at all those Dorito bags everywhere, living in their own filth. Nobody can work like that. Like, these guys are just, like, you know, fucking, I'm not going to say it, but then there's the people who like, oh, these guys, like left and right curve are like, ah, these guys are messing around here. And so you need that mix, I think, for a meme to really take off.
Yeah, and it's like,
you got to hammer both sides of the bell curve. I think we were cutting up a little bit there, Danny.
No worries. Sorry, man.
Yeah, we actually talk about that all the time. Like in a lot of the new initiatives that we'll put forward on the Monad side, it's like you have to make sure this hits on both sides of the bell curve. It needs to be able to talk to people's reptile brain, because like that's just how the internet works, but it also has to funnel for the people that actually know what's going on and are excited about Monad for like the tech instead of the community. It's crucial. And it's a balance that most people do not get. Like, the absolute mid curve is creating a project and then only posting what your project does off of the Twitter. Like, that's the crying mid curve face. It's like there's no entertainment value. It's just you're just blasting ads off of your own Twitter, and that's it. And I feel like Backpack and Mad Lads have done an amazing job of that. Like, we try to emulate that from the Monad side.
I think in crypto, sorry to interrupt you, Kevin. I think you're doomed to fail in crypto if you take yourself too seriously, because crypto is still ran by crypto Twitter. Like, it truly is. Crypto is ran by crypto Twitter. The storytelling for crypto happens solely through crypto Twitter, and you need to have the entertainment side of things. It can't just be seriousness. And I think every person that has been successful in crypto understands that. Like, for context, our angel group for Backpack, you know, we're the serious financial institution with regulators around the world, and we have that side to us, and we're really good at it. But, for example, our angel group is called, Backpack Left Curve Collective. you have to have that balance, or it just doesn't work.
Yeah, reminds me of a phrase that got repeated, like, over and over on the... it's happening again.
Dude, that's me. I'm sorry. I lagged out.
I'll say one thing and then you go. I'll tell you it'll be 5 seconds and then you can go after. But it just reminds me of this one phrase that, like, one day the phrase of the day in Monad was, like, doomed to success, to succeed, or doomed for success. And it was like, because you're taking yourself so unseriously, like, you're doomed for success, then you can't help it. But it's hilarious that doomed for failure was literally the phrase for people that take it too seriously.
Yeah, I'll add to that real quick.
I was just going to say, my screen froze out there, but I literally had a note to bring up doomed for success next.
Doomed for success. You're literally doomed. This community is too left curve. It's doomed to succeed.
I mean, our message to lads from the very beginning, we pounded into them, was... no utility, this is a rug, send it to zero, right? And that was just what we would tell our community over and over and over again. No utility, this is a rug, and send it to zero. So you can't have expectations, right? No expectations, just vibe. Just enjoy the journey. Just enjoy the journey. And I think that's what you want to have for your communities in crypto.
100%.
I would say, Danny, we are doomed for success on this recording. There's no chance
we'll succeed
by how much overlap we have. So want to hit, I know we are coming up on time. I want to save time for the last question. But before we get there, one thing I would actually personally love to know, and I'm sure it would be a good question for the audience, what are, like, if you can pick one or two things, either from, you guys have the triangle, right? You got the Mad Lads, you have Backpack Wallet, and you have the exchange. One or two things that you are most excited for over the next, like, maybe 3 to 6 month period.
Yeah. I'm just incredibly excited to keep growing the exchange and the wallet. I think we have a solid shot at becoming a mainstay international cryptocurrency exchange. I think that if we don't take our foot off the pedal and we keep working at the rate that we've been working and we keep working with as solid of teams as we've been working, we really have a chance to emerge onto this international cryptocurrency space. And that's something that we're putting our heart and souls into. So that's the main thing, is let's get massive distribution. Let's become the biggest Solana wallet. Let's become one of the largest exchanges in the world. It's going to take infinite amounts of work, but we're here for it.
Hell yeah. Sweet. Danny, anything from your side? I don't want the lag to cut out if you had a final question. Otherwise, we'll hit on the last one.
I'm just lagging out over here, doomed to success.
Amazing. Great. Well, we have one question that we have pulled from Kobe and Ledger's podcast shamelessly, because it's an amazing final question. It's the final alpha, right? So one piece of advice or wisdom, something you've picked up along the years that you'd like to leave the listeners with. It may make them wiser. It may make them dumber. We've actually very much dissected on this podcast that typically being left of the curve is how you can doom yourself to success. So it could be something along those lines, but really just something that maybe you think about a lot or you read in a book. It could be a quote from your mother. Anything that you would like to leave as kind of the maybe the final piece of advice or things to look forward to moving forward on the pod.
Yeah, yeah. The main thing is live from a place of gratitude. Be so, so grateful for every moment that you have, every breath that you have, every second that you spend here within your body, with the people that you love, with the air on your skin, with all of these infinite things that we take for granted, but are actually not just granted. At any time, this could all just be over. Anytime. That's it. It's done. No matter how young, healthy, strong you are, you never know what's going to happen. So don't take anything for granted. And if you live from a place of gratitude, it's much easier to be happy and appreciative of all the things that happen, both terrible and joyful.
Man, that is some real true alpha right there.
Maybe the best final alpha. I'm going to vote that as my number one. That's perfect.
Huge.
It's community.
Yeah.
It's crypto. Appreciate it. Appreciate
it. Yeah. Just fuck it, boys. Fuck it.
Yeah.
Lads on top.
Final alpha. Fuck it.